Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my people, and welcome back. This is Splash, and we are back. What a fantastic holiday season. I hope yours was great. We have a great show for you tonight. So much to cover. Lots on tap. The number to call is 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730, and my pond is open. I encourage you to jump right in. If you are the cautious type, then wade in carefully. Everyone swims at their own risk. We are here at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tonight, tomorrow night, and Friday night. And then on Monday, we move to prime time. That's right, prime time, 8 p.m. from here on out, doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics and so many other things. Now, we now have a blog. Our shows are posted there, past, present, and future. Go to 1111broadcasting.com. Those are the numerals, 1111broadcasting.com. And you can comment on the show, make a suggestion, or just say hi. You can also follow me on Facebook at 1111broadcasting. Ain't life exciting? If you miss a show, don't have a hissy fit. The show links are listed on the blog. So go to 1111broadcasting.com. Now, you can jump right into the show chat room. You'll need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. You just put in your email address, pick a screen name, a password, and voila, you can jump right into the chat room, pick on people, pick on me, or just say hi. Of course, you don't need to create an account to call. Just dial the number right there at the top of the show page, 215-383-5730. I would love to talk to you. Put me to the test. It'll be your time to shine. Did you have a good holiday? Did you get everything you wanted? Or were you so naughty that you just took what you wanted? Give me a call and tell me all about it. The number to call to be on the show, 215-383-5730. Tonight, we're going to talk about the new Washington. Well, it's the same Washington, but the roles are now reversed. The Elmos are in control. Almost. They still have to get past the goalie, and that be Obama, who is already issuing veto threats. We'll talk about that. What are the Elmos going to do? What are the Smurfs going to do? What is Obama going to do? We'll talk about that. What should they do? We'll talk about that, too. Now, while Congress was away, the mice did play. Obama went on vacation, but don't think for a minute that his administration wasn't busy, busy, busy to develop round two of executive actions. And did you hear? You probably don't even have to pay the fine, tax, or whatever for the individual mandate, even if you didn't get covered under the new health care law last year. It's all true. We'll just have to talk about that. All of this in your phone calls coming up, but first, let's surf the news, and not just the news of the day, but what happened over the last 2 weeks while we were all partying hard. While we were gone, in Indonesia, another airliner went missing. This time, AirAsia lost a flight carrying 162 people that disappeared on its way from Indonesia to Singapore. Unlike Malaysia Flight 370, which was never found, AirAsia Flight 8501 wreckage has been located, including the tail, which is believed to house the famous flight recording device, commonly referred to as the black box. So far, 40 bodies have been recovered, many of them still strapped in their seats. What is it with planes over there? In Athens, Greece, the AP is reporting that hundreds of passengers and a crew braved smoky fire, frigid temperatures, and gale force winds Sunday as they waited for nearly a day to be evacuated from a burning ferry adrift in rough seas between Italy and Albany. At least one person died and two were injured in the risky rescue operation. What is it with boats over there? In Amman, Jordan, the AP is reporting that the Islamic State militants captured a Jordanian pilot after the warplane crashed in Syria while carrying out airstrikes Wednesday, making him the first foreign military member to fall into extremist hands since an international coalition launched its bombing campaign against the group months ago. Images of the pilot being pulled out of a lake and hustled away by mass jihadists underscored the risk of the U.S. and its Arab and European allies in their air campaign. The capture and potential hostage situation presented a nightmare scenario for Jordan, which vowed to continue its fight against the group that has overrun large parts of Syria and Iraq and beheaded foreign captives. Reuters is reporting that from the dingy donut shops of Manhattan to the cloistered police watering holes in Brooklyn, a number of black New York Police Department officers say they have experienced the same racial profiling that cost Eric Garner his life. Racial tensions escalated after a black gunman who wrote of avenging the black death on social media shot dead two New York police officers, while police officers turned their backs, not once, but twice, on Mayor de Blasio, while he gave eulogies at both officers' funerals for his words regarding law enforcement by the NYPD. Is there anyone else who would like to chip in and make matters any worse? Meanwhile, the Huffington Post is reporting that in New York, hundreds of protesters gathered in New York City Tuesday evening showing that they don't plan to halt demonstrations, dissing Mayor de Blasio, calling to suspend their actions until the two New York PD officers killed over the weekend had been laid to rest. About 300 demonstrators clogged the city streets after gathering at 59th Street and 5th Avenue, proceeding as they'd planned weeks earlier, followed by a trail of cops. They marched upward towards Harlem, holding signs that expressed condolences to the families of the slain officers, Officer Liu and Officer Ramos, while openly criticizing de Blasio's request to pause protesters. Commander of the International Security Assistance Force, ISAF, General John Campbell, and ISAF General Domros attended a ceremony at ISAF headquarters in Kabul, Afghanistan, Sunday. The United States and NATO formally ended their war in Afghanistan on Sunday with the ceremonies at their military headquarters in Kabul, as the insurgency they fought for 13 years remains as ferocious and deadly as at any time since the 2001 invasion that unseated the Taliban regime following the September 11th attack. So, the war is over. Good for Obama. He did it. He ended the war. Huh? What's that? Pay no attention to those 11,000 U.S. troops that will still be there for at least another year. Sony authorized the screening of the interview after a mucho criticism from the public, Hollywood, and even the president for pulling the movie over the 9/11-style threats from their hackers. Sony had canceled the film's release after theaters were refusing to show the film over fears caused by the hacker threats. The AP is reporting in Washington that TV host and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee says he's leaving his Fox News talk show as he considers whether to seek the Republican nomination for president, a decision he expects to reach this spring. Huckabee said Saturday night's edition of Huckabee would be his last as he ponders his political future. The weekly show, which is taped with a live audience and featured political commentary as well as interviews with the guests and musical entertainment, has been on the air for more than 6 years. You know, folks, I got to tell you, I think Huckabee's time has come and gone. You know, ever since he started that show on Fox, he is a DOA when it comes to running for president. That's just my opinion, of course, not part of the news. In Washington, the AP is also reporting that the first Republican-dominated Congress to confront President Barack Obama, the GOP leaders will focus on bolstering the economy and cutting the budget. And, oh yes, avoiding self-inflicted calamities that make voters wonder if the party can govern competently. I'll tell you what, they're their own worst enemy. They're the only ones that can defeat themselves in 2016. Now, when the new Congress raises the curtain Tuesday, Republicans will run both the House and the Senate for the first time in 8 years. The GOP leaders want to showcase their legislative priorities, mixing accomplishments with showdowns with Obama by shunning government shutdowns and other chaotic standoffs. We'll see how that goes, and we'll talk about more about that tonight. Chris Rock and his wife are divorcing after 19 years of marriage. In a statement by People, Malik said, after much contemplation and 19 years of marriage, they've decided to go their separate ways. They're, of course, asking for privacy in a very public way. A Brazilian man drove more than 2 hours to a hospital with a knife sticking out of his head after being stabbed at a party. The 30-centimeter-long blade narrowly missed his left eye, Lucelo Nunez's left eye, and passed through his mouth into the right side of his jaw. That's from G1 News website reporting. The knife passed through several nerves and veins, structures that can quickly kill a patient, said Albuquerque, the director of the hospital there in Triznia. The knife was removed and given to police who are investigating the attack, of course. He added that the 39-year-old was recovering surprisingly well. Mr. Nunez also suffered 2 knife wounds to his throat and shoulder and chest when he was stabbed after an argument at the party in Arabranca, more than 60 miles from the hospital. The motorcycle taxi driver said he got into a dispute with a man who then called 3 others to attack him. He did not see the moment of the stabbing, but at no time did he faint, and he remained conscious even during the pain. I thought I was going to die and only came to believe when I saw what happened to me, because if somebody told me, I would not have believed it. His wife, of course, was shocked when she saw him with a knife in his skull and didn't believe he was going to make it either. The couple now plans, because New Year's has gone by, to spend New Year's Eve at home with their family. Probably a good idea. In Houston, the AP is reporting that former President George Herbert Walker Bush was admitted to the hospital Tuesday evening. That's last Tuesday, folks, not this past Tuesday, but the one before that. After experiencing shortness of breath, Bush, 90, was taken by ambulance to Houston Methodist Hospital as a precaution, according to spokesperson Jim McGrath. He was held for observation again as a precaution. He was there for a week, but he's back home now. So he's 90. I can't believe that guy's 90. Turns out that running long distances isn't so good for you. What's good for you? Beer. Anthony Carboni explained why you should pour a nice cold one the next time you want to get healthy. Turns out that running long distances is not very good for you. Findings by the U.S. cardiologist reveal that long-distance running, anything over an hour a day, can cause long-term damage to your heart. Also, any running sends 2.5 times your body weight reverberating through your joints. Repeat that over and over again, and something's got to give, usually your weakest joint. People usually put that weakest joint in a brace, which sends the impact to your next weakest joint, usually a knee or an ankle. Running can also make you fat. Your body needs to burn fat. Energy needs fat to burn for energy. So the more you run, the more your body tries to store up fat. If you live in a city, jogging forces you to breathe in more dust and smog, which can lead to high blood pressure, asthma, and even heart disease. The alternative? Drink a beer a day. The benefits of hops are incredible for your heart, lungs, and bones, all of which are destroyed the more you run. Of course, that study was commissioned by a beer company, so go figure. Jackson, Mississippi, the AP reported that severe storms slamming the South 2 days before Christmas killed at least 4 people, flipping over cars, knocked out power to thousands, and damaged several homes and businesses. In Connecticut, the AP is reporting the first college football playoff semifinal drew the 2 largest audience in cable television history. ESPN had a 15.2 rating and an average 28,271,000 viewers for the Sugar Bowl broadcast Thursday night after drawing a 14.8 rating and averaging 28,164,000 viewers for the Rose Bowl. That's from Nielsen. Both games had significant increases from last year on ESPN when the Rose Bowl drew a 10.2 and the Sugar Bowl drew a 6.6. ESPN also will be broadcasting January 12th, the national championship game between Oregon and Ohio State. Go Buckeyes! A lousy economy has dealt a blow to the Russian drink of choice, vodka, and Vladimir Putin is coming to the rescue. Facing the worst economic history in the 80s, since the 80s, Putin capped the price of vodka. Good to know that even totalitarians have their priorities in order. In Chicago, Reuters reported that on Christmas Eve, minimum wage increases across the United States will prompt Walmart stores to adjust their base salaries at 1,434 stores, impacting about a third of its U.S. locations, according to the internal memos reviewed by Reuters. The memo, which was sent to store managers earlier this month, offered insight to the impact of the minimum wage hikes in 21 states due to come into effect around January the 1st. These are adjustments that Walmart and other employers, not just Walmart, have to make each year, but growing attention to the issue has expanded the scope of the changes. 13 U.S. states lifted the minimum wage in 2014, up from 10 in 2013 and 8 in 2012. I don't know if those numbers really matter. It's only 50 states, and they only raise the minimum wage every so often. Now, Walmart spokesperson Brooke Buchanan said the company was making the changes to ensure our stores in the 21 states comply with the law. See there, Walmart's a law-abiding citizen of the United States, if you consider corporations people. In Washington, the U.S. economy grew at a sizzling 5% annual rate in July through September period. That's the third quarter, folks, actually the last quarter of the fiscal year for the United States, the fastest in more than a decade on the strength of higher consumer spending and business investment. The resurgence in growth last quarter provided the latest evidence that the U.S. economy is steadily strengthening and outshining most others around the world, which has always been thus. President Obama, of course, you know, tried to take all the credit by swearing that the mean old Republicans never let him pass any of his economic policies while forcing spending cuts through sequestration. Remember how all the Republican obstruction, government shutdowns, and harsh spending cuts of the sequestration were supposed to kill our economy? So I suppose you could thank an Elmo for obstructing Obama so we could have a 5% growth last quarter. Actually, thank the Fed for continuing to pour cash into the economy. Thank the private sector for their true grit in spite of Obama's regulation-happy agencies. And thank the American consumer for getting out there and voluntarily transferring their wealth to the rich corporations. Yay for everybody. Now, for the first time in a decade, Super Saturday sales, that is the Saturday before Christmas, topped Black Friday sales. The Dow, while we were gone, shot up over 18,000 and then slid back towards 17,000. And today it posted nearly a 200-point gain. Of course, oil continues its downward slide. It's now below $60 barrel. Yay for that. Give me those low gas prices. I paid $2.15 a gallon for gas the other day. Still want it to be below $2, but it's getting there pretty quick. That's just some of what happened over the last 2 weeks. If you want to talk about any of that, jump right in at 215-383-5730, the number to call, 215-383-5730. Now, before we get into the ACA exemptions to the individual mandate, let me tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my family to Choice Mattress, and everything was considered, from the weight of each family member to their age to the way each of us sleeps. The right mattress was personally selected for each of us. Now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. Chances are, if you bought a bed in Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years, then you bought it from David. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located at the corner of LPGA and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you have questions, David is always happy to answer them. Give him a call at 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice you can make in your sleep. Now let's talk about the individual mandate for the Affordable Care Act and the many exemptions that we're finding are available to people who failed to get covered. If you want to talk about this, the number to call, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. Interesting to note, when you file your taxes, if you failed to sign up for insurance during the current open enrollment season last year, you've locked yourself into an even steeper fine for 2015. Last year's fines, as you know, were $95 per person that was uninsured or 1% of your annual income. Of course, kids, if you didn't get your kids insured, you paid at half the rate. Just like you get a discount on an airline seat, you get a discount on your fine if you don't insure your kids. What if you couldn't afford health insurance or you have religious reasons opposing it? The law allows for exemptions, lots of them. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, by 2016, almost 90% of the 30 million people still uninsured won't pay the penalty, primarily because they'll qualify for one of nearly two dozen exemptions. Some of the biggest exemptions, if you live in a state that didn't expand Medicaid, nationwide about 4 million low-income people will remain uninsured because they lived in one of the 23 states that chose not to expand its Medicaid program in 2014, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Now, people with incomes at or below 130% of poverty, that's about $27,000 a year for a family of three, they won't be eligible for the Medicaid coverage if they live in a state that didn't expand under the program. In many cases, these folks also won't get a subsidy to help them buy private insurance through the marketplace because their income was too low to qualify for the premium tax credits. So they fall betwixt and between, and if they are in a state where the state did not expand Medicaid, then they can qualify for an exemption from the tax. Initially, people in this situation were required to apply for Medicaid and be denied or to get a hardship exemption certificate by applying through the marketplace. The idea was that you had to show that you didn't get either. But the IRS recently changed course, thanks in part to a blog post by a blog post co-wrote in the Journal of Health Affairs urging, where'd that go? I just had it right here. Da-da-da. Yeah, there it is. There we go. Urging them to change that rule. Now, this hardship exemption can be claimed on your 2014 tax return. It's that simple. Now, if your income is too low to file taxes, if you're below that certain threshold where you don't have to file, that's the case for a single person who earned less than $10,150 or a married couple with an income below $20,300, they don't have to file. Therefore, they don't have to pay the tax. Now, if health insurance was too expensive for you, you can qualify for an exemption. Now, they do define that, of course. Despite the subsidies to lower costs, health insurance remains unaffordable for millions of Americans. Did you get this? Now, this is right from, by the way, healthcare.gov's website. Despite subsidies and lower costs, health insurance remains unaffordable for millions of Americans. And what's that first word in ACA stand for? Oh, yeah, affordable. I forgot about that. If coverage is too pricey for you, you'll qualify for an exemption. The rule is that you get the affordable exemption if the cheapest cost plan is more than 8% of your income. There are a number of reasons why a person might find themselves in this circumstance. For example, an individual with an income in 2014 of roughly $29,000 and a family of four who earned about $59,000 would qualify for a subsidy to help pay for their insurance, but would still be required to pay more than 8% of their income, the law threshold for insurance being deemed too costly. So they get an exemption and don't have to pay the fine and don't have to get covered. Now, if you hit a family glitch, you can get an exemption. Here's how this plays out. One member of the family has a job that offers affordable health insurance for the whole family, which means no member of the family can get financial help to lower cost at the marketplace. But under the law, it's only the cost of the employee's insurance that's taken into account when determining whether the job-based coverage is affordable. It meets this standard as long as the employee's insurance premium is no more than 9.5% of the household income and covers, on average, 60% of medical costs covered by the plan. So if the plan is intended to cover 60% of medical costs, and whatever the employer pays of the employee's premium brings his premium to less than 9.5% of the household income, then it's deemed affordable even if they have to pay full boat for the rest of their family. So that family could end up paying up to 15% of their household income, but it's still considered affordable as long as the employee's coverage alone meets that law standard. So if the cost to cover your family through work-based insurance in this case exceeds 8% of your household income, the family members qualify for the exemption and you don't pay the tax on the family members. Another exemption is hardships and other exemptions. There are tons of these. There are a host of those that are defined as hardships that may qualify you for exemptions under the healthcare law. Here's some of the ones listed in healthcare.gov. If you're uninsured for less than 3 months of the year. Now, this means this was intended so that if you didn't get coverage until March 31st, it didn't start until April 1st, then those first 3 months fulfilled this exemption. You don't pay the tax on those months. Now, if you were insured by January 1st and you decide, hey, after September 30th, I want to drop my insurance, and you're uninsured for October, November, December, that's less than 3 months of the year, you're not going to pay the tax. The lower priced coverage available to you will cost more than 8% of your household income. You're exempt. You don't have to file your taxes because your income's too low. We already covered that one. If you're a member of a federally recognized tribe or eligible for services through Indian Health Service providers, then you don't have to pay the tax or get insured. You're members of a recognized health care sharing ministry. These are interesting. These are groups of people, usually with a religious affiliation, although you don't have to have a religious affiliation to belong to them. These are all people that basically chip in and create a pool, and then when people have medical needs, their needs are paid out of that pool. And if they start to run low on funds, guess what they start doing? They pray for money, and they put out big notices and say, hey, we need more money, and the people chip into the pool. If you are a member of that, you don't have to prove that you're a religious, God-fearing person, just that you're a member of that healthcare sharing ministry and you're exempt from the tax under ACA. You're a member of a recognized religious sect with religious objections to insurance, including Social Security and Medicare. All you got to do is, by God, swear off those programs and you're exempt. If you're incarcerated, if you're detained or in jail, you're not being held pending a disposition of your charges. So you're exempt from paying the tax. If you're not lawfully present in the U.S., lawfully present definitions are listed, of course, in just a moment. But if you're not lawfully present, meaning you're an illegal alien and you don't get insurance, then you are exempt from paying the tax. I don't even know why they need that rule, but there it is. There are so many other hardships listed here, you can fall into these if you fall under these following circumstances. If you were homeless, you're exempt from the tax. If you were evicted in the past 6 months or with facing eviction or foreclosure. So just don't pay your rent, pile it up, until they send you an eviction notice, you were facing eviction, you can file for an exemption, then just give them all the rent money. You receive a shutoff notice from a utility company. How many people have received those? You're exempt from paying the tax. It doesn't even say you have to have it more than once, just one time. You recently experienced domestic violence. Wow. Does that mean that if you commit the domestic violence, you're also exempt? I'm not really sure on that one, but that is definitely listed as a potential for exemption. You recently experienced the death of a close family member. You experienced a fire, flood, or other natural or human-caused disaster that caused substantial damage to your property. Here's one. If you file bankruptcy in the last 6 months, you qualify for an exemption from the tax. If you had medical expenses you couldn't pay in the last 24 months that resulted in substantial debt. Wasn't that the whole reason ACA was invented in the first place, was to prevent you from having medical expenses in the future that you wouldn't be able to pay, and to keep you from filing bankruptcy? Now, but if you have them, you qualify for an exemption. You experienced unexpected increases in necessary expenses due to caring for an ill, disabled, or aging family member. If you expect to claim a child as a tax dependent who has been denied coverage in Medicaid and CHIP, and another person is required by court order to give medical support to that child. In other words, you got divorced, that other person is required to pay for their health care, and you could not get them qualified for Medicaid or CHIP. In this case, you don't have to pay the penalty for the child. As a result of an eligibility appeals decision, you're eligible for enrollment in a qualified plan through the marketplace, lower costs on your monthly premiums, or cost-sharing reduction for a time period when you weren't enrolled. That basically means if you had to appeal to get a health care plan and subsidy under a marketplace, then you're exempt. If you were determined ineligible for Medicaid because your state didn't expand eligibility, then you're exempt. We already mentioned that one. If your individual insurance plan was canceled and you believe the market plans were unaffordable, this is, remember, when all those cancellation notices went out because people's plans didn't fit the mold of ACA, and then Obama came back with his fix. Oh no, we'll go ahead and grandfather those in. And so the insurance companies had to turn around and send out a second notice after the cancellation saying basically, what's the matter? Can't you take a joke? But if you decided, if you were one of those 5 million people, nah, I'm not going to get that insurance plan, that was canceled, and you went to the marketplace and decided, nah, those are unaffordable, then you're qualified for an exemption. And now here's my favorite. If you experienced another hardship in obtaining health insurance, do you remember how many glitches there were with the marketplace? I mean, so many people that got frustrated, they were trying to encourage them all to go back. If you didn't go back because you were too frustrated, you experienced a hardship in obtaining that health insurance, or any other reason that you can even remotely relate to that, then you qualify for an exemption. I'm going to say that just about anybody who put their mind to it could qualify for an exemption in some form or fashion from having to pay that tax if they themselves did not do what Obama said and get covered. So there you go. Of course, there's a long, long list of people who are considered to be lawfully present in the country. That means you're an immigrant and you're here lawfully. They've got a whole kinds of lists of people that qualify under that regard, and those people would have to pay the exemption if they didn't get marketplace coverage, which means they can get marketplace coverage. I'm not really sure, and don't really want to get into that debate tonight, whether they should or should not be allowed, and whether they should or should not get subsidies. But anyway, that's a big old debate, and it's a huge section on healthcare.gov. For people to decide whether or not they're a legal alien or an illegal alien. Anyway, you can check that all out at healthcare.gov. All the information's there as it was laid out in the law. But you can certainly apply for those exemptions. The form is right there for you to download in a PDF if you need to file for an exemption if you didn't get covered and you don't want to pay that tax. So that's I found that very interesting to find all the many exemptions that are available to people if they don't get covered. So if you want to talk about those exemptions, give me a call at 215-383-5730. And again, I want you to remember, when it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and his staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my family there, and everything was taken into consideration to get the right mattress chosen for each of one of my family members. And now we all dream easy every night when we go to sleep. And of course, every mattress carried by Mattress Choice comes with a 5, 10, or even a 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. So David's been in the business for 20 years, and he knows beds. And they have all every other kind of furniture you could possibly imagine there at Choice Mattress for every room in your household. So go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road. That's at 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. Or you can give them a call at 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice you can make in your sleep. Congress is coming back into session here, and guess what? We got a new power balance, or lack of balance there, with the Elmos taking over both the House and the Senate, and by pretty substantial margins. The House Republicans have the largest margin that they've had since in decades, and of course they've got a 54 to 46 margin in the Senate. That's pretty good. That's pretty strong for them. But the interesting thing is that there's well, there's a battle line being drawn between the Elmos and the Smurfs, but in particular between the Elmos and President Obama. Of course, Obama is he. During Christmas break was on vacation there in Hawaii, but his staff was ratcheting it up and getting ready for a whole new slew of executive actions. They are certainly going to touch on so many different areas in really the only way that Obama can do it. I mean, when you talk about it, the Smurfs are pretty powerless in the Senate. I mean, they will be able to filibuster from time to time, but they are even more fractured than they claimed that the Republicans were with the Tea Party caucus in their party. Obama will be touching not just through his executive power, his executive orders, but also through regulatory control. He'll be touching on all facets of government in as much as he can through the executive branch, in the areas of energy, especially with the control of methane pollution coming out of old oil wells that have been capped, and of course through the climate change agenda, he'll be touching on that. In the area of labor, they will certainly be aiming at reclassifications of low-wage workers and tightening the white-collar exemptions. Of course, they will be definitely focusing on the minimum wage. In healthcare, they'll be focusing on what they can do in the area of healthcare, and that, of course, is going to hit the courts. The Supreme Court is considering the wording with regards to subsidies and those states that did not create their own insurance exchanges. In the area of education, Obama is going to be all over the 4,000 colleges and universities like stink on a hog on how many low-income students that they have, how affordable those colleges are, and their outcome measures like graduation rates, job assistance, and things like that. So He's going to be definitely addressing education and also using his executive power with regards to technology through the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, especially when it comes to web traffic equality or that policy that's commonly called net neutrality. In agriculture, they're going to be coming out with new food safety rules through the FDA. They're going to be using his executive power with the EPA with regards to water in the United States. Opponents are already calling it an example of big government overreach. And yes, there are organic pet food standards on the way through the Department of Agriculture. In transportation, they're going to be focusing on specifically the Highway Trust Fund, because that fund is running dry and it'll actually go insolvent in May. Of course, lawmakers would like to come up with something more than a short-term patch, but there's always important new regulations as well. The Department of Transportation rule due out early in 2015 that would address the recent series of oil train accidents, setting a new standard for the tank cars. That's important because one of the big debates with the Keystone Pipeline and its construction is that the way we're carrying oil now delivers only a quarter of the oil that the pipeline could transport, and that these train wrecks and explosions with these ancient are massively destructive, have taken human life and destroyed just tons of environmentally sensitive areas. I don't know if you measure environmentally sensitive areas in tons. But anyway, I mean, that's a big part of that debate. If they can fix those tank cars, maybe the XL pipeline might have another problem in demonstrating its need. In defense, of course, you're going to have a new Secretary of Defense. That's Ash Carter, and he's going to be coming right up against the return of sequestration. So he's going to have to find a way to negotiate through Congress an avoidance of those cost-cutting reforms hopefully make them a little more targeted. It would help if Congress would stop passing bills that include purchasing of weapons, of weaponry, planes and tanks and whatnot that the Pentagon doesn't even ask for. In the area of trade, there might be actually some room here for agreement between Obama and the Republicans, and Obama will actually get the most flack over these things from his own party. The Democrats will make it'll be easier because Harry Reid won't be there, forcing the Democrats to take a difficult vote before a midterm election. Of course, Harry Reid refused to do that, and therefore these things did not come to a vote when he was the majority leader. But at the same time, Obama's also going to be getting a lot of flack from labor, because labor is very unhappy, especially in the automobile industry, with these trade deals that Obama has been striking all around the world, especially with Asia. In the area of taxes, the administration is expected to try and draft rules to rein in social welfare groups. I love how they list this, from small Tea Party groups to Karl Rove's Crossroad GPS, that engage in too much candidate-related political activity. Notice how they didn't mention any liberal or progressive groups in that listing there, almost giving the idea that Obama's administration is going to focus on only conservative groups that engage in too much candidate-related political activity. The government is weighing also a pivotal question about how much political activity could push groups out of their tax-exempt territory. Of course, there's also the issue with regards to the so-called tax inversions, like the one Burger King did that was funded by Berkshire Hathaway and one of their big insurance companies that was the financing behind that, when they purchased Canadian company Tim Hortons and moved its headquarters to secure a lower tax rate. These are all areas that Obama, through his executive actions and through the regulations, through the agencies that fall under the executive branch of the government, are going to be focusing on. And that's key. Now, the a newly unified Republican Congress, which will use all the tools at its disposal to try and stop individual policies and blast the Obama administration for being too rule happy in general. They'll talk a lot about how, in their view, Obama is indifferent to the economic impact of all of his regulations. And that's something to take note of, is that these regulations are classified. If it's a major regulation, then what the CBO is basically saying is that it will have an economic cost to industry of $100 million a year or more. And that's massive, because Obama himself has, passed 331 major regulations that fall into that category of $100 million or more as a cost to industry. The Republicans will talk about how Obama is indifferent to the economic impact of his regulations. And that is, in my opinion, all the MOs should do, is highlight that fact. They should not get distracted by trying to stop Obama and stop his go-it-alone executive actions. Just keep a list of them while sending any and all bills that they can pass, veto-proof or not, to the president's desk. Force him to make choices. He will sign some. He will allow some to become law without his signature, but he will veto most of them. The Elmos may be able to muster up enough Smurf votes to overcome some of Obama's vetoes, but whether they do or not is not the point. The job of the Elmos over the next 2 years is to A, show that Obama is a go-it-alone president that ignores the people's representation, and B, that the real obstructionist to the people's business has been sitting in the Oval Office all along. Heretofore, Obama had Harry Reid as his hitman, bumping off House bills so that Obama didn't have to get his hands dirty. Those days are gone now. He's going to be playing the obstructionist using the same filibuster about which he whined when he was the majority leader, and that's it. But the filibusters are generally not successful. So Obama is going to be faced with bills coming to his desk that he's going to have to be forced to make a decision. So now it'll be all Obama, Obama the my way man, Obama the obstructionist. What he is forgetting is that the people voted against that approach. Remember when he said, "I may not be on the ballot, but make no mistake, all of my policies are on the ballot this November." And they were. And they lost. They lost big. They lost huge. So let him use his veto as he threatened. Force him to use his veto pen as he threatened. It will be at his own party's peril. And if the Elmos had better keep a list of all of the go-it-alones and all of the vetoes, and use them. Better that they do this, the better they do this, the better their chances are of keeping the House, the Senate, and winning the White House in 2016. Then, and only then, will the real work of pulling up the tracks of the now derailed Obama Express begin. The president doesn't seem to care about the impact of his regulations on families, said John Barrasso of Wyoming. That's true. If he doesn't consider the cost of these things or the impact that it will have on jobs, it's a complete neglect of the economic impact of this load of new rules. Of course, the Obama administration says that that's not so. When you can't go do it through Congress, do what you can do through the executive branch. They're not denying the fact that they are willing to do this on their own. Incoming Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has already said he'll do everything he can to stop the EPA's rule to limit carbon dioxide emissions from coal plants and other facilities, which is supposed to come out in its final form this summer. I'm telling you, folks, that is a big mistake. It's a big, huge mistake on McConnell's part. He is going to waste so much time and distract his troops so much by trying to stop what Obama's doing, and Obama can only do things on a limited basis, and there's really not much you can do about it. So you just need to let that ride and get there, pass bills that you and the House can agree on, and you guys are on the same side, pass those bills, send them to the president's desk, force him to make a decision. In any case, they are pointing to the 331 major rules during Obama's first term, regulations that have an economic impact of at least $100 million a year. He's going to pass more of them, so just let them pile up, and you'll have to talk about the impact that they have on the economy. So anyway, that should be the strategy. But creating a big fight over this stuff is just a mistake on the part of the Elmos, because if they focus on getting things done, sending bills to the president, if the president doesn't sign them, pointing out that he is the one standing in the way of the people's business, that's their best chance to get the White House in 2016. And without the White House, they cannot start undoing some of the damage that Obama has done. If a Democrat gets the White House in 2016, that's it. These policies will become so woven into the fabric of society that unraveling them would be political suicide. It's do or die. If you get the White House in 2016, great. If not, you might as well just hang it up. It becomes another Social Security that you can't do anything about. You can't even touch it to try and fix it. President Obama has threatened his first veto. Actually, he's now threatened a second one. But at the time I was prepping this show, he had threatened his first veto over the Keystone Pipeline vote that will be coming through the House and through the Senate. It will pass. There will be a small filibuster, but it won't make it. There may be enough votes to override the veto, but President Obama threatened to veto it. And all I can say is that's it. Come to Papa. This is exactly what the Elmos should want. It is certainly what the Elmos need. Veto, veto, veto. I don't know. I mean, the American people support and believe that the Keystone Pipeline is good for America in an overwhelming majority, sometimes 2-1. In some surveys, but certainly in the high 50s in a lot of surveys. So worried that the worried White House aides spent time over the last few weeks behind the scenes to make sure they had the votes to sustain a veto and prevent Obama from being humiliated by an override. And you know what? While an override would be humiliating to the president, it really is just as devastating to the Smurfs in 2016 if the veto is sustained by a close vote. The big mistake the Elmos can make, the biggest mistake they can make, is to cower at this point and not pass the XL pipeline bill, forcing Obama to approve it. If this is the strategy for the Elmos they're going to use, send all the bills to the president's desk and force a decision. He will veto like crazy and expose himself as a do-nothing president, an obstruction president. This is vital to the Elmos' success in 2016. Now, normally, I don't really care who becomes president in a presidential election. Generally speaking, I don't think it really matters. A lot of you that know me from the blogosphere know that in 2008, I didn't believe that it mattered who became the president. I was just trying to help out. And when it came time to vote for president, guess what I did? I flipped a coin. The coin landed on tails, and I voted for Obama instead of McCain. Because to me, it didn't really matter. The president of the United States at that time was already sitting in the speaker's chair. That was Queen Pelosi. She was either going to have her policies rubber-stamped by Obama, which is pretty much what he tried to do. If it weren't for the Elmos and their filibuster-happy Senate, that's exactly what would have happened. Or she was going to stuff them down an aging John McCain's throat. Either way, the price was the same. So I flipped the coin, checked the box for the lucky winner, happened to be Obama. In 2012, of course I didn't like Obama for obvious reasons. The Obama Express should and needed to be derailed. He lost the people's representative in 2010. We took the House away from him. And weakened him in the Senate. But before the people's will could be instilled in January of 2011, Obama and company shoved the Affordable Care Act right down our throats. It was not something that was overly supported like the XL pipeline is. It was very unpopular, and Obama did it anyway. It was almost a vengeful payback to the people for taking the House away from him and weakening him in the Senate. The people spoke. They did not want Obama's version of health care reform, and Obama forced it on the people anyway. Anyway, in 2012, I couldn't in good conscience vote for Obama again, but I wasn't a fond of Mitt Romney's wishy-washiness either. So I voted for every other office on my ballot except for president. I just left it blank. But in 2016, it does matter who wins the White House. It matters a lot. The Obama Express has been derailed. He is now a lame duck president. He only has his regulations, which can be undone by the next president, and he only has his executive orders, which can be undone by the next president. So this time, it really matters. But it matters most of all, because without winning the White House in 2016 and keeping the Senate and the House in 2016, the Elmos cannot start to pull up the tracks of the Obama Express so that Obama Express remains derailed. Send the XL pipeline bill and keep those bills coming. Let Obama veto, veto, veto. He may not get embarrassed by any overrides. In fact, I expect that the Smurfs will be even more unified against this new Elmo majority than the Elmos were unified against Obama. If the only reason that things are not happening is because of the veto, then the Smurfs will lose the White House in 2016. And if the Elmos win the White House, that will help them keep the House and Senate. That's my advice to the Elmos. I sure hope they take it. And here's the Democrats saying that they're eager to see their president dig in and concentrate more on fighting than on compromising. Really? Fight? Don't compromise? Why, how very Republican of them. Do you see? This is how the minority party does things. They filibuster, they use procedure to block, and if they have the White House, they threaten veto, and they actually veto what the majority wants. Funny how when the Elmos engaged in such tactics, they were obstructionists who hated the president because he was. But now that the Smurfs are engaging in the same tactics minorities have always used, it's suddenly okay. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is setting the keystone as his first order of business for the new session, with fast passage through the House expected on Friday. It's part of the GOP's attempt to undercut Obama quickly and devastatingly, even before he gets his State of the Union address done. He's either going to have to concede on approving the project, as he's resisted and his base hates, or kick off his promised era of bipartisan cooperation with what could only be his third veto ever. I'm telling you, folks, this is smart, smart, smart. Unless that's all you do. So keep doing it. Send Obama another bill, and another bill, and another, and another. Keep that lame duck spinning one leg, because that's exactly what he's going to try to do to you. He is going to go crazy with the executive orders in order to distract the Elmos from doing the people's business. And if you let him distract you, you will lose in 2016. But if you ignore him, let him do what little he can through executive action and focus on sending him bill after bill after bill, you will be in the driver's seat. Then you are governing and he is obstructing. He and he alone will be the obstructionist, and that will translate into over to whomever is chosen as his potential successor. Elmos, don't waste your time trying to undo what Obama does. It is what he wants you to do. Don't do it. Well, that's a wrap for tonight's show. My pond will reopen again tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll talk about this, that, and the other. Remember, we're here through Friday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then next week, it's prime time, baby, 8 p.m. from here on out. I hope you'll join us. Check out the website. See what's up. 1111broadcasting.com. That's the numerals, 1111broadcasting.com. And until tomorrow night, do what you love and love what you do.